This week, March 2nd, 2015, on The Digital Story. Tips for seamless panoramas. A visit to the Havana Club set at lynda.com. Canon and Nikon news. All of this and more with yours truly, Derek Story, on The Digital Story. Welcome back to another Digital Story. I am down in Carpinteria this week in Southern California, and I'm working with the lynda.com team, and we're going to take a visit over to the set that they have created for the Cuba movie. We're calling it the Havana Club set, and I have some pictures of it that I'm going to share in the show notes, and we're going to do a little behind-the-scenes interview with the videographer and the producer and the lighting specialist, the grip. It's really fun, and it's really a chance to sort of see, you know, how we prepare these sort of things and the thought that goes into it. So I'll run that a little bit later in the show. But before that, I'm going to do a weekly update, and we're going to talk a little bit about shooting panoramas, a topic that I haven't visited for a while, and I have some great tips for you. But first, let's start with the weekly update. Weekly update. The Nikon D7200 boasts low light AF improvements and increased buffer depth. And this is from DP Review, talking about the latest release from Nikon, their latest enthusiast DSLR, with a 24.2 megapixel APS-C CMOS sensor. It offers very slight resolution increase over its 24.1 megapixel D71 predecessor. There's a lot of stuff for you right there in one sentence. And like that model, it lacks an optical low-pass filter. Also, a next-generation 51-point AF module with increased low-life sensitivity, built-in Wi-Fi and NFC with an improved 100-shot buffer depth when shooting JPEGs at 6 frames a second. Other notable features include 1080 60p video recording, improved battery life of 1,100 shots per charge, and weather-sealed magnesium alloy body. The D7200 will be available in April as a kit with an 18-140 f3.5-5.6 lens for $16.99 or body only for $11.99. So the D7100 was a very popular camera for Nikon. I thought it was actually one of the best APS-C cameras that they made. And this is the update to it. As we are seeing a lot with releases right now, refinements as opposed to just, you know, overhaul and brand new components, we're seeing updates and improvements over the existing models. The D7200 looks like a nice update to the popular D7100. And again, you can read more about it by clicking on the link in the show notes that takes you over to DP Review's story on it. In other news, we have a review of the Canon 11-24mm F4L. And basically what they said was pricey and heavy, but unmatched optically. The Canon EF 11-24 F4L USM officially holds the title as the widest rectilinear full-frame SLR lens with its 126-degree diagonal widest angle of view. And there's no mistaking the lens for anything else less than an extreme wide angle given its huge and gorgeous 108mm bulbous front element. Is it worth $3,000? This review will help answer that question. And essentially what they said in the review, and you can read it again, the link is in the show notes, so I'll take you over to the Petapixel article, is that the image quality is outstanding. It's very nicely made. It's extremely wide lens, basically the widest rectilinear lens available right now for DSLRs, and you're going to pay a price for it. Just like a lot of other specialty lenses, when you need it, you need it. And for those that need this lens, this one looks like a beauty. And that is this week's weekly update. Story number one, tips for seamless panoramas. So I have been having to shoot panoramas lately, and I'm not talking about the kind with my iPhone, even though the iPhone captures very nice panoramas, especially when you're on the go. But I'm working on a project where I've had to shoot panoramas with my mirrorless cameras, and you'll learn more about that project later on this month. And I was thinking, as I was shooting these panoramas and really enjoying doing this again, it's been a while since I've shot panoramas with a regular camera, I thought, well, there are certain things I've learned over the years that just make this process go smoother. And I thought, well, I'll share some of those tips with you today, because it's really neat when you have a series of 6 or 7 frames that you've captured of a beautiful scene that looks good from a very wide angle, as we would do with this type of panorama. And you take those images and you run them through the photo merge or the stitcher or whatever you're using, and they just come together beautifully. And you get that first output after the processing is done, and you look at it and you go, oh man, that turned out really nice. That's really a cool feeling when you pull that off. What are some of my tips so that you can have that kind of moment? Well, first of all, use a tripod. Yes, you can shoot panoramas handheld. And what happens is, though, that you lose so much of the picture, of the final picture. Because, you know, what happens is when the stitching software stitches it together, it merges, you know, the parts that you've overlapped, creates a single image. Now, when you don't use a tripod, you're probably having a little bit of up and down movement. The software will find the alignment, but everywhere where you're out of alignment, then you're going to lose content. And what happens is you'll end up with a very narrow image when you don't use a tripod. When you use a tripod and you level it out first, I usually start somewhere, maybe not exactly in the middle of the scene, but a little bit to the left, a little bit to the right. And I actually use the level controls in, let's say, my Olympus camera that gives you the up and down and the right to left. Get it nice and level. And then with the level controls still showing, I sort of swing it around and see, okay, how much out of level is it going to go as I go from left to right? And then if it's going out a fair amount, then I will try to adjust the tripod or find another spot. Something like that, where I can keep it more or less level as I make all of the exposures. Then on the tripod, I'm using a ball head. I'm using the Joby ball head. But what's nice about it is that you have one control knob for the ball head and another one for just panning. So I can lock down the top knob so the camera stays in place, just loosen the panning knob, and then swing the camera and make my exposures. And when I do that, then I lose a lot less of the material after the final stitch. So that's one of the main reasons why I think using a tripod is good, that you just get to retain more image information. Now, these panoramas are easier, especially when you have a blue sky in your panoramas. They're easier with the sun to your back. And the main reason is for that is that when the sun's to your back, the sky that is in front of you is more consistent in color. And that makes it a lot easier when you're stitching together these different frames. Whereas if you're shooting, you know, angling toward the sun or away from the sun, the color of the sky changes as you move that around. And therefore, in the final image, you may have more shift in the color of the sky than you want. When you have the opportunity to have the sun behind you, then that blue sky stays a more even color and it looks a lot nicer when you stitch stuff together. Now, I use a manual exposure when I'm doing panoramas, and I don't want the camera changing the settings on me as I go from frame 1 to 2, 2 to 3, 3 to 4, and etc. I want to keep that exposure the same all the way through. And of course, when you have the sun to your back, then that, you know, that makes manual exposure a lot easier in the sense that frame 1 and frame 7, for example, will probably have pretty much the same tonal range anyway. So, but manual exposure keeps things from happening. And remember, if it's changing the aperture or something while you're going through these frames, that really can affect the stitching in the end. So manual exposure is really a great way to go when making panoramas. The other thing I like to do is lock in my focus. And I like to use, in my case, when I'm shooting Olympus, I'll use the 17 millimeter F1.8 because it has the snap focus, which means I can just pull that focus ring back and it's in manual focus mode. I can set it on a big panorama, you know, where I'm basically shooting at infinity. I'll set it just inside of infinity and leave it there. And that way the camera doesn't accidentally autofocus on something else as I'm going through the scenes. So both manual exposure and manual focus work great for this. Don't forget to overlap. Generally speaking, the rule of thumb is overlap about a third or maybe 25% as you go from frame to frame. Give the stitching software lots of information so it can do the alignment properly. Mark your first and last frame, especially if you're going to be shooting a number of panoramas. Now, I usually just do this with my hand or a lens cap. So at the first frame, I'll put my hand in front of the camera, take a shot. I know that's the beginning. Shoot my however many frames I'm going to shoot, 5, 6, 7. And then after the last frame, shoot another picture with my hand again, pointing the other way. And then that way, I know all those frames in between the two hand shots are the frames for the panorama. If you don't do some sort of marking and you're shooting a lot of shots, you're going to end up with a lot of images and you'll have to figure out, okay, where's the beginning of the panorama, where's the end? And, you know, you can use a timestamp and things like that for that, but it's just so easy and so visual just to take a picture of something in your hand, a lens cap, whatever. You can even get fancy and have little signs, you know, at the start and the end of the panorama. But whatever you use, you want to have that just to make it easy when it's time to pick the frames to stitch. And finally, I like to shoot raw. And the reason being for that is that I have more tonal range to work with. And in the end, you know, it just yields a higher quality product. So those are my tips for shooting panoramas. Just something to keep in mind, especially when you're out traveling. And remember, you can get panorama note cards, print out panoramas. And, you know, as you're shooting, you know, these frames that have high resolution and you're stitching them together, that means your final image has a lot of pixels, which means you can make a very big print if you want. So panorama is a lot of fun. We tend to forget about things as we explore other things. And I just wanted to bring this one back onto your radar. Next story, we're going to go behind the scenes at lynda.com, and we were working today on the set for the Photographer in Cuba movie that I'm shooting right now. I thought, you know, I have my favorite crew right now at Lynda working on this project. They're great people and they're very talented people. I thought, wouldn't it be interesting to hear a little bit about the thought process that goes on as we're preparing to make a movie. So I sort of like I did with the Lumix Luminaries, I set the recorder down on the table. We recorded in stereo, so you can kind of hear the different voices in different places. And we just talked for about 10 minutes about what is the thinking process and what are we doing as we prepare for shooting. We're going to start shooting tomorrow. So this is on the eve of filmmaking. And I hope you enjoy it. I think it's a fun conversation. So I'm sitting around, we're in the actual set here that we're going to use. We're in the Havana Cafe, as we call it here. And these guys have been working on the set all day, and this is where we're recording the movie, you know, the photographer in Cuba that I'm working on with Linda right now. So I'm here with Jacob. Hey.
Hi there.
And Lauren.
Hello.
And Heather.
How's it going?
Yep. And so these are the people, when you watch the movie, these are the people that made it happen. You know, so you'll see me, but they're all standing around me telling me to do stuff and making this set look great. So I got some pictures of the set. It looks cool. I mean, it really looks cool. So we're not in the normal set here, are we? This is kind of a new thing for you guys?
Well, it's a part of a larger series of stages that we recently were able to kind of take over and remodel to turn it into a set. So yeah, it's a little bit of a newer direction.
So this was what, a sandwich cafe at one time?
It was a sandwich cafe.
Yeah.
That's it.
It was right here on the Linda campus. We're right on the Linda campus right now.
Yeah, we used to buy sandwiches from here.
Yeah. Yeah, and then, you know, things happen and all that.
Yeah.
But this actually looks better than it did when it was
the same. Yeah, definitely.
Our set director, Greg, has been doing the wood trim, and these are all flyaway pieces that we can adjust and... like the counters and things.
They might still be in business if they had you here to do their set design for them, actually. So you guys have been working on this all day, right? I just popped in here. This is about 5 o'clock right now. I just popped in here to torment you a little bit. But tell me what you guys were thinking. You know, like when you started this morning, it was a blank slate in here, right?
Yeah.
So, well, you know, what did you want to create? What was the vision here?
Well, the idea that we talked about was some sort of coffee house, coffee shop vibe. You know, we've got a prop room with all kinds of knickknacks and different little things that, if arranged properly, can look like different places. And so with some of the items that you brought in and some of the things that we had around, we did our best to make it seem like Havana Cafe.
It's the Havana Cafe. I mean, yeah. We even have, you'll see it in the shot. I took some shots here. But we have the chalk sign in the back, and they put a light on it. And we've got, like, some of the stuff that I brought. And like Jacob said, we got some of the things. Where did this fan come from? This fan is just, like, really cool. Is that from the prop room?
It is from the prop room. I think it originally belonged to...
someone who was on staff at one point who donated it for a shoot. So,
oh,
yeah.
And then that was it.
Yeah, it didn't find its way back home, so we're lucky enough that we get to
You'll see it in a variety of courses. Right. Keep your eyes open. Right.
So, you know, that's what they say in Cuba when, you know, someone loses their property or something, they made a donation to the government.
Yeah, that's
I'm just saying we heard that term a lot, you know.
Yeah. Well, so, a lot of this was inspired by the footage that you shot, so we got a chance to look at it before you came out here, so we could kind of get a sense of, you know, what experiences you had on the road and some of the still images that you took, and so that gave us a chance to kind of think about visual aspects that we can tie in.
Let's talk about that for a second so folks kind of know how the process works. So, you know, we had a couple production meetings on the phone, sort of like, you know, all right, Derek, what the heck did you do there? And, you know, what and then you wanted me to send you content, you know, so I tried to semi-organize it.
Yeah.
And I sent stills and video. So when you guys sat down and reviewed it, what are you looking for when you're looking at that stuff? I mean, what are you thinking about? Are you trying to, because you're the one, when I've worked with Heather before, she does a great job of pulling things together into a story. Are you thinking about a story when you're looking at that, or are you just trying to vet it?
Well, no, it's both, but really I'm looking at, so what did you write in your original outline? What were you proposing you were going to include in the course in terms of, you know, different kinds of teaching elements and different visual elements to support a teaching? And so getting a look at your assets, as we call them, beforehand helps me kind of think about, okay, so these are the things that you said you were going to do, and these are the things that will tie into that visually that, you know, I can then make notes about as you're recording.
Right. And then we were talking about that process today, like how are we going to do that? And kind of what we decided is that I would talk about a topic that we've agreed on first, and then we'll look at the assets a little bit and try to match up visuals with what I said, which I think is easier than going the other way, for me anyway.
if we got these set of pictures, say, okay, talk about the set of pictures, the story might not feel as natural.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
It's always more authentic if you can just let it evolve as naturally as possible. It doesn't work for everybody, but in your case, you're a natural presenter that way, and so it is better to have you just kind of talk about an experience and know that we have the visuals to support it.
Yeah, that's why I like working with you guys, because you let me do that, too. Hey, Lauren, I want to talk a little bit about the lighting here. So how many lights do we have going on here as I'm looking around? And
We have a lot of little spotlights here and there just to pick out things, because we wanted to keep it kind of a warm evening feeling, you know. And so Jacob would put some set dressing in there and I'd throw a light on it so we could see it.
It's really interesting, because when I was shooting the stills, I mean, I'm looking at this with my eyes and I go, oh, that looks nice, that looks nice. And then I put a camera on it and the camera just, boo, it just like, it just drinks it. It just soaks it. And I noticed that's kind of the way you do. You guys set some lights and then you have a monitor, they have the monitor set up with the image, and you're always kind of going off that monitor, right?
Yep, that's kind of the system. You know, you can look at it in real life whenever you're on set, but no other angle that you can view the set from really matters beyond what the camera records. So yeah, it's always a little tweak and then back to the monitor, and a little tweak back to the monitor.
Yeah, I noticed even since I've been here, it's been like a lot of little back and forth.
Yep.
So just a couple questions before we wrap. So one is, what's the biggest challenge about, you know, when we're at, before, we're going to start recording tomorrow, right?
Right.
So, you know, as you're getting ready, what's, you know, what's the biggest challenge on this kind of day here, you know, as you're saying, okay, we've got to accomplish this, or, you know, do you want to go to sleep tonight knowing that everything's ready, or are you okay saying we're close enough, or, I mean, you know, what's the feeling there?
For this particular shoot, I think going to bed thinking close enough would be absolutely fine. But I actually think that we're pretty much ready.
Yeah.
I think a lot of it also just has to do with, you know, you coming in with the attitude of like, I'm prepared and I'm excited about it. That makes a huge difference for us. Because if you came in and you were like, yeah, I got to think about some things before I get in here in the morning. You know, I've got to decide what I want to talk about.
Yeah.
You know, that makes a difference for us.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, just so you know, from my standpoint, whenever I'm coming in to do a shoot, no matter what we're going to do, if I'm not 100% sold on it, then I don't want to do it, you know, because otherwise I just feel like I'm wasting everyone's time.
Well, that's good.
You know.
Yeah, that helps us.
If I don't totally believe it. And I have to say, this title that we're going to start shooting tomorrow, probably more than anything I've done in recent history, you know, I'm excited about, because it's more than just, you know, I do my share of standing in front of the computer and saying, you know, press this button and all that, which is good. It's helpful.
Right.
I know it helps a lot of people. But, you know, we're going to be talking about photography in Cuba. But, you know, Heather, you've been.
Yeah.
Right? So you know what I'm saying here. The minute you go there and start interacting, it's more than photography. You get hooked on these people on this island.
Yeah, it's a life-changing experience.
It is.
I mean, it's a immediate recognition of history, because time stood still for such a long time, and so you just see it everywhere, and just like you said, the people, it's incredible to interact with the people and kind of hear their stories and their perspective, and and it's just such a visually rich place to be, and getting to, you know, see you talk about it and be able to share your experience with other people is pretty exciting for us too.
Awesome. Well, good. Well, thanks you guys for doing this, for setting aside. We just wanted to give everyone a feel for, you're going to see some shots, and then when you see the movie, you'll go, wow, those guys are really good. Derek even looks good. All right, thanks a lot.
You're welcome. Okay. Right. Happy to do it.
Aren't they cool? I love working with these guys. Well, I hope that was fun for you, and you know, wish me luck as I'm filming this. And obviously, we'll be talking more about it once it comes out of editing and it's ready for release. All right, a little virtual camera club news. This month, no photo assignment. Yes, we have a gallery up right now on the digital story for the backlighting photo assignment. And then we're going to publish another gallery at the end of this month, the Goodbye Gallery. And if you still want to send a picture in for the Goodbye Gallery, I'll accept it. This is the last one. And then next month, what I'm going to do, we're going to take this month off. And then next month, We'll talk a little bit about how we're going to move forward with a monthly project that we can all work on and share our images with. So enjoy the backlighting gallery right now. I think it's absolutely terrific. If you have an image that you want to submit for the goodbye gallery, still do it. I'll take it. And then we'll run that gallery at the end of this month, and then we'll move on to the new thing. A note from our good friends over at SizzlePix, SizzlePix.com. Even though we're not doing the photo assignment anymore, they are still sponsors of the podcast and help me keep the show on the air. And remember, when you want the best output possible for your favorite images, SizzlePix is definitely the way to go. You see your image on polished aluminum. It is durable. It is an ecological friendly process. And you just open the box and you can hang it right on the wall. You don't have to get a frame or anything like that. They have a tile on all the pages of the digital story. SizzlePix is like a retina display you can hang on the wall. And our good friends over at Red River Paper. And it's funny, you know, I was talking last week about, have you made your latest round of archive prints yet? And then, you know, I started seeing these stories. I think I read two stories this week about, well, you know, when the digital winter comes and all of our digital devices, you know, go toes up, you know, we'll be glad, those who did, that they have archive prints made, because that may be the only thing that lasts. Now, I'm not preaching digital doom and gloom at all. I'm just saying that it's a good habit to get into to print a dozen or so prints a year of your favorite stuff on good paper, Red River paper, archive paper, and keep them in a safe place. And if something does happen to your hard drives or to however you're storing your images, then at least at the end of 5 years, 10 years, whatever, you have this collection of your best work that's on paper and that, you know, will survive just about anything other than, you know, fire and flooding. And even then, you could, if you're making the prints yourself, you could make two sets and have the second set somewhere else. The way to do this is print it on Red River paper. They have a tile on all the pages of the digital story, and go over there to our landing page, use the discount code, do a little printing. You'll be glad you did. You'll feel like a real artist. Okay, that's going to wrap it up for me. Again, I'm recording on location. I'm not in the studio at all. And I hope you enjoyed the interview. Working on some very interesting stuff for next week, so make sure you come back. Until then, have a great week. I'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye now.